massive stakes in election 2004 with Congressman Dennis Kucinich. And I want to welcome also Trudy Inslee here. She tells me that Jay would definitely have been here and probably would have made the end of this introduction, except that he's at a rally of health care workers. And he was with Dennis last night at a very rousing rally in Seattle. So I'm David Corton. I'm a resident of 6 years in Bainbridge, author of When Corporations Rule the World, and co-founder and board chair of the Positive Futures Network, which is a nonprofit on the island that publishes Yes Magazine. I am also particularly proud to be a friend and colleague of Congressman Kucinich from Ohio, former presidential candidate and co-chair of the Progressive Caucus of the U.S. Congress. When I introduced Dennis in the same auditorium on July 19, 2003, he was just beginning his run for the Democratic presidential nomination. This was the first exposure many Bainbridgers had to Dennis. And we, of course, were all greatly inspired by what he said that evening and thrilled by the fact he was bringing issues into the campaign that other candidates lacked the vision or courage to address. Dennis is a politician who has earned our trust by speaking truth. I personally would have preferred to be introducing Dennis here today as the Democratic Party's nominee. His Democratic colleague, Senator John Kerry, and we are here to support him in this mission because we recognize that this is the most important election in any of our lifetimes. Bush and Kerry. And I must be candid that I myself have serious questions about a political system that offers us a presidential choice between a rich white male graduate of Yale University and a rich white male graduate of Yale University. However, to deny the significant differences between Bush and Kerry on issues ranging from environmental protection, nuclear proliferation, women's rights, civil rights, the Supreme Court, labor rights, and national security is intellectually dishonest. Furthermore, Kerry has a stunning advantage over Bush in his intelligence, honesty, understanding of the world beyond America's borders, respect among foreign leaders, his ability to admit and learn from mistakes, and his capacity to articulate a coherent sentence. Bush stands on his record. And indeed, the accomplishments of the current Bush administration have been breathtaking. In less than 4 years, it has turned the biggest budget surplus in our nation's history into its biggest deficit, presided over the first net loss of jobs since President Herbert Hoover, squandered lives, money, and international reputation on an unwinnable war with no exit strategy against the wrong enemy, weakened milestone environmental protections like the Clean Air Act, exacerbated inequality, threatened Social Security and Medicare, undermined guaranteed overtime compensation and key labor rights, dismantled what once were considered unassailable constitutional rights, appointed extremist judges to our country's courts, and established a new military doctrine of preemptive military war. That's quite a record. Perhaps Bush's greatest failure, however, is in the area he claims to be his greatest strength, national security. The most devastating terrorist attack in human history occurred on his watch. 3 years later, not a single U.S.-based accomplice to this complex operation has been identified and charged, nor has anyone been charged with responsibility for the subsequent anthrax attacks. The administration that immediately identified Osama bin Laden as the ringleader couldn't find him in Afghanistan, so it invaded Iraq and captured Saddam Hussein instead. Now, I am not a Democrat.
I'm a member of the Green Party. I'm also a member of Greens for Kerry. In the 2000 election, I was one of 113 members of the official Nader 2000 Citizens Committee. This year, I am one of more than 75 members of that committee who have signed a statement urging progressives to vote for Kerry in swing states. You may have heard that even Winona LaDuc, Nader's former running mate, announced just 3 days ago that she is voting for Kerry in this election and urged other former Nader supporters to do the same. This is a time for unity among all of us concerned for democracy and the future of America. We simply cannot afford 4 more years of what may be the most extremist, corrupt, incompetent administration in U.S. history. Dennis is here to tell us what we can do to get our country on a more positive course by electing John F. Kennedy to the U.S. presidency, re-electing Jay Inslee to the U.S. Congress, and re-electing Patty Murray to the U.S. Senate. Dennis, welcome once again to Bainbridge. Here's Dennis.
Hello, Bainbridge. Hello. Good morning. Coming on the ferry across from Seattle, there's a kind of weather here that reminds me of Cleveland, okay? It's this kind of brooding, cloudy environment that you can get, you know, lost with thoughts in a teacup, you know. And it brings out the poet in any one of us. I was thinking on the way over here, as we pulled up and you could start to see the signs of autumn, I was thinking of this song from long ago, of Simon and Garfunkel, "Hazy Shade of Winter." Look around, leaves are brown, and the sky is a hazy shade of winter. Hang on to your hopes, my friends. That's an easy thing to say, but if your hopes should pass away, simply pretend that you can build them again. Good morning. The New York Times this morning carries this grim report out of Fallujah that the United States is stepping up the bombing neighborhoods in Fallujah. This in retaliation for a bomb that was set off in a restaurant in the so-called Green Zone in Baghdad. We are escalating the war in Iraq at this very moment. And frankly, understanding the pattern of this administration, how they used absolutely unconscionable objectives and executed them in Iraq, it's not a stretch to believe that they're entirely capable of escalating this war on the eve of an election in order to heighten concerns that Americans have about war. It's not a stretch that an administration which took this country into a war against a nation that did not attack us, which falsely tried to make the connection between Saddam Hussein and 9/11, which falsely tried to make the connection between Al-Qaeda, Hussein, and 9/11, which falsely tried to make a connection between the anthrax attack and Iraq, which falsely implied that Iraq had the intention of attacking the United States, which falsely implied that Iraq had the capability of attacking the United States, which falsely said that Iraq was trying to get uranium from Niger, which falsely said that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, that this same administration, which has lied from the beginning of their administration unto this moment, is entirely capable of escalating this war in order to try to win the election. We must drive them from office, and John Kerry's candidacy is the vehicle we are going to use to do it. So good morning. The Republican National Committee is threatening to sue one of the activist groups that is going around stating that if Bush were to be reelected, there would be a draft. Because we know that if Bush were to be reelected, there wouldn't be a draft. Only a fool would think there would be a draft. So put away your fears and concerns about a draft. When you looked at the debate, you know, I know coming out of the primaries, you know, everyone was just kind of taking their game face off and trying to figure where do we go next. But when we saw the debates, as David said, how could anyone come to a conclusion that there's no difference between Bush and Kerry? Oh, my God. What we saw, let me tell you something that we've seen here. You know, I've had a chance during the course of a campaign, you get to know people and their families. And John Kerry and I campaigned together across the country, you know, as political contestants. But we had a chance to get to know each other, and you get a chance to take a measure of a person. What I saw was someone who has real grace under pressure. I mean, let's face it, there was a time when, you know, I can't say that, you know, that I was ever considered to be in contention, but I could say that, you know, except when you got to Alaska and Hawaii, but that was a little bit later on. But Iowa was a make or break, and it really looked like Howard Dean was sweeping to victory. And Kerry didn't quit. He hung in there, and he showed real perseverance and an ability to be able to take great pressure and still move forward. Look at the measure of this man who has been under the most vicious attack that a presidential candidate could be under, because what they did, they took something that was central to who he is, his service to the country, and they tried to turn it, just totally distorted. Think of how he handled that attack with dignity. I mean, really, you know, never lost his composure, kept the debate on a high plane. In the course of this campaign, he has become the president of the United States. He really has. And now we have to make it official. He has become the president. You've seen the way he's handled this. This is somebody who at this time we need to be able to be truly our representative to the nations of the world, as well as someone who has the intelligence and the understanding of the systems of government to try to make them finally respond to the needs of the people. We know, for example, that a Kerry administration would be all over this oil spill that occurred in South Fashion. I mean, we know that. He would be right there. There would just be no question. We would know already who was responsible. There wouldn't be this idea that anything goes, that you can create a time lag in reporting and things like that, because there's a different mentality. The mentality of the government right now is every interest group knows that they have as much leeway as they want, because how much enforcement do we have of environmental laws? Very little. The quality of our air and water has materially declined in many areas of the country, because there's been so little enforcement. John Kerry has had an outstanding record in the United States Senate on environmental issues, key to a place like Bainbridge and others in the Northwest. So does it make a difference? It makes all the difference in the world. We're not just voting on a president in a couple weeks. We're voting on matters of war and peace. You know, there's been much debate about John Kerry's choice of voting for the war. I have to say that, you know, when you see the ambivalence that he's expressed, it's caused many of us to pause and say, well, what's this about? I think I figured it out. Here's someone who has seen war up front. He has seen people die. He has he came out of it absolutely opposing the experience. And I think perhaps part of what he was expressing, what we've seen him express, is this ambivalence about war. He really isn't sure about war. I don't think that's bad in someone who's going to be a president. I think what we have to worry about is someone who is so cocksure that war is the answer, who's just ready at a moment's notice, go get them, we're going to get them, us or them. We've got to change that type of thinking in this country and in this world. And isn't it interesting how easy it was for someone who never made that commitment, who avoided studiously or unstudiously service that would have taken him in harm's way, to be the one to be sending troops over? Casualties are over 1,080 American troops, over 7,500 injuries, tens of thousands of innocent Iraqis killed. Last night, 11 500-pound laser-guided bombs dropped in neighborhoods in Fallujah. I want you to think about that. Muslim clerics are declaring that if this continues, they're going to call for a holy war. See, this escalation which is occurring right now, right on the eve of the election, this is something this government has control over. Troops from a combat unit, supply unit, refusing to go on a mission because they don't have the protection to do it. This administration clearly doesn't care about the troops, sent them in harm's way without properly equipping them, trying to send them on what troops call a suicide mission. What for? In order to keep a war going, to try to stir it up on the eve of an election. This is a serious moment in our country's history and in the history of the world. How often have we in our own experience known that the choices we make can actually affect the destiny of this nation and the world? Truly, it can be said of this moment in American history. Truly, it can be said that we are the ones that we've been waiting for, that we are the ones that must show up to transform this country, to give it a new start. There are representatives here. I think Aaron is here from the Kerry campaign. And what, Aaron? Wave. Hi, Aaron. And on this island, we need people who will, in the next couple of weeks, commit some time to knocking on doors and making phone calls. We cannot leave this to chance. We have to have the most powerful surge that's ever been seen. Forget what the polls say about Washington State. There needs to be a tremendous turnout here, so it's unequivocal. And that turnout is going to help Senator Murray get reelected. That turnout is going to assure a big victory for Jay Inslee. That turnout is going to affect the governor's race and elect a governor, Gregoire. So we need to remember that this effort here makes all the difference in the world. I came here this morning as not just an advocate of John Kerry, who is my friend, who's become a close friend throughout this process, but as an advocate of this state and this nation. It is all in the balance. It's all in the balance at this time. We often think that the events of national and world history are removed from us. We seldom have the opportunity to see ourselves right in the middle of that ferment as catalytic agents of change. Yet that's where we are. We're right there. And so the question is, are we up to this moment? Are we prepared to respond? Do we hear the sound of the trumpet calling to our hearts to lift this nation up, to give it a chance to reconnect with the world, to lighten the burden that the world feels now in the threat of ongoing war. We're truly choosing war and peace. There's never been a moment when our choice was more central to the world as it's being created and recreated. So I thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning, to have the chance to reflect some thoughts from the poet inside of me and the politician that meets in places like this with that poet, to talk about what we might be able to do, in the words of Tennyson, to seek a newer world. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We're going to have some questions here. And there's a mic, is there a roving mic?
Yes, we have a mic up here. And
okay.
If you could line up on either side of the middle aisle, and I'll bring the mic to you.
And you know, this is a great moment because my first visit to Bainbridge was memorable because people here may ask questions that people in other places wouldn't ask. You have a kind of a joie de vivre, a sense of freedom about things here that it's very healthy. that's why I feel right at home. So I want to thank, by the way, join me in thanking Mrs. Inslee for being here, and thanks, Judy, appreciate it very much. I'm Jay.
Thank you. I just wanted to add to his comments that we have the chance in this state to get two seats in the House of Representatives back. Dave Ross in the 8th, Jennifer Dunn's old district, thank you, and Don Barbieri can help get Speaker Foley's seat back in Spokane. So anybody that you know that lives in those areas, please call them, ask them to come out and support those candidates. We can win those seats. We're having an event tonight at the Hyatt in Bellevue for the candidates. If anybody can come, we'd love it. And also, I'm a member of Women for Kerry. Please join our Take 5 program. Everybody find 5 people who didn't vote in the last election. 22 million women between 18 and 35 did not vote in the last election. Find them, get them to the polls, watch them sign their ballot. Whatever you need to do, they're out there. If you can't find them, call us. We'll give you names and have you call them. They're there. So thank you very much, and thank you, Dennis.
Thank you. Quick response before we go to questions. I appreciated Jay being there last night. And Jay Inslee has been so wonderful to work with in the Congress, not only because of the great leadership that he's shown on energy issues with his advocacy of the Apollo project, but also, you should never forget this, that at the moment of maximum peril, when this country was on the verge of going to war against Iraq, when the ferment was going in the House of Representatives to try to push a bandwagon for George Bush's war, there were just a handful of people who came together to organize against it. And I had the honor of being one of those. But another person who was absolutely essential to organize, who actually was the whip of our efforts to track down all these members of Congress and hold them in line and make sure that they voted against the war resolution so that we were able to get 125 members who voted against it, who now look so prescient based on the events of the last couple of years. But it was Jay. And Jay, well, I was glad we worked together, though. I just want you to, you can, you know, all of us can lead at any moment, but who's going to be there with you, you know? And Jay was absolutely magnificent. I mean, and he was right there, solid, with real courage and the ability to take a stand. You have you have a member of Congress here who is not just making a difference, but who represents a principle of courage and action that needs to be treasured. So just keep that in mind. As someone. So, questions? Yes.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for your candidacy, and also thank you because you were right. The question I have, what is your sense, your real sense, of the Nader factor in the upcoming election?
The election is becoming sharply polarized. In Ohio, for example, where Nader is off the ballot now and has been, but it tried to get, you know, and it may appeal it. But what's happening in Ohio and other states is the race is polarizing between Democrat and Republican, or between, even more aptly put, between Kerry and Bush. And perhaps putting it even more succinct, between yesterday and tomorrow. And what is happening is that in that polarity, Nader's support is beginning to dissipate very quickly. I want to back up a second and just share this with you. Ralph Nader and I have worked together for more than 30 years. He's somebody who I have the deepest respect for. In this election, however, it's just so clear that that the Republicans are doing everything they can to try to further, and have done everything they could to further Ralph's candidacy. And they're doing it for one specific reason, to see if there's a few states where he can pick some votes off to enable Bush to pull ahead. We cannot let that happen in this election. And furthermore, I would suggest to those who also are friends and supporters of Ralph, and who feel strongly that they just must, under principle, support him, I just want to offer this for your consideration. The Ralph Nader legacy has been one of consumer advocacy, of environmental protection, of support for workers' rights and human rights. Another 4 years of George Bush would destroy that legacy. I mean, it's just one of those paradoxes of the Nader candidacy in this election. And so we have to have the ability to negotiate the contradictions and paradoxes in life and in our politics. And one is that that the best way to protect the Nader legacy is not to vote for Ralph in this election, but to get rid of Bush, which means we have to vote for Kerry. Now, I want to say one other thing about this. We all know what John Kerry is not. So, you know, we don't have to have any illusions about this. But also, he will bring to the presidency a tremendous range of accomplishments. As a member of the Senate, we can't forget that. You know, it's so easy to look past a person's accomplishments when there's something that you want that you think could be better. But the truth of the matter is that Kerry has all the makings of being a really good president. But we have to give him a chance to do that. And so the Nader factor, in some states, it could still be a factor, you know, depending on whether he's going to show on the ballot or not. I mean, there was a story in the New York Times the other day that talked about how it could still be a factor. But my own sense is that as the race becomes very clearly polarized, it's going to be either Bush or Kerry, and that we're going to ask everyone who feels strongly, as I do, about the issues that Ralph Nader believes in, to join us in our first step towards reform. Because we have to look at it that way. It's not, you know, John Kerry's election is the first step. It's not an end in itself. It's a new beginning. But we'll be denied that opportunity if we fail to answer this challenge. Next question.
My question is, part of your campaign always started with no fear, and that's been really an important message to get out.
Yeah.
My concern is I see Kerry winning, and I have a great deal of concern for November to January and what could go down in those months while Bush is still in Washington, and I'm wondering how we can be proactive for that period of time.
Well, you know, I'll tell you that, first of all, I would just like to suggest something. And maybe this comes from my days of studying Zen. Focus. We have 3 weekends here to go. Focus on this election. We need to put all of our intention, all of our heart, into the next few weeks to create the outcome we desire. That's the first thing. When we do that, it will impact everything that happens afterwards. If we take this in a proper time sequence, we will be able to create, after the election, the same desired outcome that we created going into the election. Going into the election, we want to create a new president. Coming out of the election, we want to make sure that nothing is done in that interim period to destabilize the government. We'll be able to do that. For the first time, George Bush is about to become accountable to the people of the United States of America. He missed that opportunity in the last election. But he will have this wonderful chance to come into contact with the power of the democratic process. It will no doubt be a great and teachable moment for him. But so I wouldn't worry about that. In a sense, you know, you began the question talking about fear. We must be fearless going into the election and coming out of the election. We have a great opportunity to literally let all those fears that we felt in the last few years, just to let go of them. And in a way, the only hope that the Bush administration has in the next few weeks is to cause people to be fearful about the outcome of the election, to be fearful about whether the votes are going to be counted right, to be fearful about a whole litany of things. But fear robs us of the potency of our own experience. It robs us of our ability to break free and to create transformation. So when we let go of that, and that's what I've talked about throughout the primaries, we then empower ourselves. That's what this is about. And what is more an act of empowerment than people coming together in an election across the country and changing their president? It's an amazing moment in the constitutional experience of this country. We're part of this. That's why, again, I'm going to appeal to you. Before you leave here, contact those who are here from the Kerry campaign. Aaron's over there. We want to get people involved here. If you've never done anything before, if you've never made a phone call before, if you've never knocked on a door before, find out the magic of what happens when you touch another person and you say, this is the moment that we come together. We don't even know each other, but this is the moment that we come together to change the circumstances of our government and of our community and of our nation. I mean, this is what an incredibly powerful expression of our humanity. To be able to do that, so we have to not worry about the day after the election. We have to use our energy to create a new president. Next question.
I was really proud and relieved, to tell you the truth, during the three debates, how Senator Kerry discussed things and how he just consistently talked about issues. But one thing I was disappointed and a little bit wondering about was why the environment wasn't brought up as a question by any strong question. And by the two candidates, they seem to both dodge the issue, while Senator Kerry has such a strong record, and Bush, I know why he didn't talk about it.
Well, I'm going to get right to your question. Well, let me answer your question first. First of all, about the environment. We know, for example, with the Bush administration, here in Washington State, you've got 47 Superfund sites that carry toxic waste that are harming public health. This is under George Bush. That according to one study, you've had 165 increased deaths from pollution because of this administration's policies. You've had $8.5 million less in funding under the Clean Water Act in this state alone because of this administration's environmental policies. You have 13 national park areas that are literally endangered because they haven't had adequate funding to address a maintenance backlog. You know that the Snake River and the Spokane rivers rank among the most polluted in the country. This is George Bush's environmental policy that affects Washington. And we also know the nexus of environment and energy. I mean, think about it. You know, in a way, that oil spill has such a deep and profound statement of where we are. Reliance on non-renewable, colliding with the environment and ruining the environment. That's what his policy is about. Yes, it would have been good if John Kerry had taken the moment to challenge him on the environment. Remember, though, that most of the questions were guided by the the moderator. That was the setup. The moderator set the tone. If he had asked a question about the environment, John Kerry would have been there to seize the moment based on his entire career. And it's been John Kerry that's been talking about our over-reliance on oil and how we need to move towards sustainability. So he was ready, but the question wasn't asked. Had he answered it, it would have had to be to respond to to actually inject anew the issue. However, we know where he's at on the environmental issues. One of the other telling moments in the debate, I thought, was the president, every time he was challenged on the issue of jobs, he switched it to education. Yeah. Now, think about this. Let's think about this, okay? I mean, I was so tickled hearing this because Kerry would say jobs and the president would go, education. And so what happens is that, am I missing something here? But, you know, in these 9 million people who are unemployed, a lot of them have bachelor's degrees and master's degrees and PhDs. And I think they do. Many people already have an education. And that's no exaggeration. And we're going to need to change the occupation of the person who's head of our nation. Next question.
The corporate domination of our government.
Domination. This is catchy.
That domination is a perturbation, I think, to everybody in the room.
And this is turning into a rap thing, you know?
And let me stop the rap with a non sequitur, and the domination of our government is by corporations is carried out in a bipartisan way. Very much in a bipartisan way. And so by directing progressives to the electoral process, as opposed to, say, the Million Worker March, which I didn't see an endorsement of, or directing them to, I think there's a confusion between corporate domination and fascism. So people see a drift toward fascism when the legal domination of our government by corporations shares many of the same characteristics, thereby bringing us that confusion.
Okay, question.
The question is, why deliver progressives, given your platform, to Kerry?
Okay, you know, first of all, if we call ourselves progressives, then we should stand for progress or progress. And would anyone dispute that the election of Kerry is progress as opposed to the re-election of Bush? So let's stay with our terms here for a moment. So now, what we have to make sure we have to take pains to do some reflection here as progressives, that we do not maintain a hold on an ideal that incapacitates us from using our real energy to change things as they are. And so, you know, by the way, I mean, I consider myself an idealist. You know, we are such stuff as dreams are made on. Ah, but a man or a woman's reach should exceed his grasp, or what's a heaven for? I'm an idealist. But I also know that ideals aren't static icons, that we have the opportunity to infuse them with our vision and to put our energy into those ideals and to vivify them, to make them real. The question is, how do we make the connection between that spiritual realm from which ideals come in the material world? That's really the biggest challenge that all of us have, connecting the spiritual and the material. The only way you do that, I believe, is through ethical action. So it's true. You raise a good point. Both parties are controlled by corporations. We know that. But we have to have the kind of of utter faith in ourselves that we can win a rigged game if we stay united as a community which has an intention to transform conditions. We never truly know what the outcome is going to be absent our participation. So we can't stand apart from this election and call ourselves progressives. We can't say, well, we can't get our hands dirty in this process because it might benefit some corporate interest. We understand the hold that corporations have in our government. I mean, David Corton cataloged that years ago and told us about what happens when corporations have this kind of impact. But at the same time, we're the ones who are creating this new energy that will be of consequence to all the structures in our society. For example, I predict the day will come when the hold that insurance corporations have on our healthcare system will be broken. The day will come when the hold that pharmaceutical companies have on this country will be broken. The day will come when the hold that oil companies have on this nation will be broken. And the day will come when the hand that arms manufacturers have on this nation will be broken. And we are going to be the ones who will call that day forward. But we're not going to stand on the sidelines waiting for that day to happen absent us. So, let us be progressives. And let us elect Kerry. Next question.
One of the October surprises seems to be that the Sinclair Broadcasting Company is on 60 or 70 TV emptying their normal programming, putting on this propaganda thing against Kerry's service. Okay. A couple months ago, Michael Moore put out his movie, Fahrenheit 9/11, which I saw and which it was very successful. I'm very glad it was so successful. It wasn't perfect, but it's very interesting. And my question is, to kind of counter this Sinclair thing, would it be possible somehow to get Michael Moore's movie on lots of TVs all over the country?
First of all, the concern that you expressed is a legitimate concern about the fact that a major broadcast outlet is using its access to the airwaves, which comes, by the way, through our permission, to try to change the outcome of the election by putting a piece of propaganda on the air proximate to the election. We should be concerned about that. And if any of that's happening in Washington State, people should call those local stations and threaten a boycott of their advertisers. Because that's all these stations understand is advertising revenue. That's all it's about. It's a business. But it's very clear that these are Republican supporters of President Bush who are using everything they can. But let's take it a step further. When are they going to give it up on this Swift boats stuff? I mean, what is it with these people? It passes from an arc where you have a contest, communication, confrontation, and goes into pathology. Really. We're talking about something here that reflects a type of thinking that bespeaks a kind of a disintegration going on, a lack of connection to the practical aspirations of the people of this nation. Millions of Americans out of work, millions of jobs being outsourced, 45 million Americans without health care, kids across this country going to substandard schools, environmental disasters happening everywhere. And this war, this awful war in Iraq. And what do the president's strongest supporters want to talk about? Their fictional version of events of 30-some years ago. This is pathetic. I mean, it really is. And these people want to be given the opportunity to continue to guide the fortunes of our nation? I don't think so. Swift boats. I don't know.
I have just a little follow-up on that.
Sure.
And that is that George Soros, very rich, said one time he would invest lots of money, you know, to help beat Bush. If this movie had to be paid as an advertisement on TVs,
I can just say this: that there is a blizzard of TV advertising going on. That's the other thing too. We're almost at the point now, 2 weeks out, of oversaturation. Now, my background's in communications. I can tell you that there is a point where the message just skips off the water like a stone. You know, it skips off our consciousness like a stone skipping off the water, because there's only so much you can absorb. And so I think this, people have already made up their minds pretty much. And this avalanche of advertising that's coming in the last few weeks, and I would put this TV show in the category of advertising, it's just too much. People already know. And you know what? And we're not going to be spun anymore. We're just not going to be spun anymore. Okay, we got it. We know what you're up to. Thank you, and goodbye. You know, we're not going to be spun anymore. This is really a question of our own integrity. It's about, and you know, one final note on this. This isn't just about who John Kerry is. This is about who we are. Whether we're going to be taken for fools by an administration that has used the communications power of the White House to distort everything. They have tried to alter the social construction of the reality of this country to create an alternate reality, George's world, that we're supposed to live in. You know, really. You know, except unlike Chauncey Gardner in the movie Being There, you know, the only way we get a chance to change the channel is inside the voting booth. Okay, a couple more questions, and then we're going to have to...
Just about addressed everything, and I really, really wish you had worked hard for you to get it. But number one, I have a gift for you from the Young Democrats of this county.
Oh, great.
Great Kitsap County. And I would like for you to address to the people, because people don't really know, that No Child, I got a real bad cold, No Child Left Behind was based on fraudulent manipulation of the computers. I've been trying to get that to you for a whole year.
Okay, wait a minute. Okay, now I've got to describe this. Okay, it says the original George W. Bush baby, voodoo doll. I am not going to read the rest of this. Because we are being taped. And did I ever tell you how much I love the FBI and the CIA? No. But anyhow, here it is. Coming soon to a store near you. Thank you. No Child Left Behind. Yeah, right. Okay. We know the president didn't fund the program. So there's a lot of children left behind, and transformed the educational system so that we'd have a nice little nation of test takers whose schools get defunded even more if they don't pass the test. What a crazy way to run an education system. We need to give our president an education in this election about democracy, about what happens when an administration fails to stand for peace, for social and economic justice, redistributes the wealth of this country upwards, doesn't care about the effect of their policies on a great mass of Americans. This is our moment to be teachers. Next question.
Thank you, Mr. Kucinich, for coming. I have one comment and one question. The comment is for this auditorium. Several weeks ago, as I was driving down 305, I was ashamed to see a Bush-Cheney sign with liars and big red spray paint across the sign. Now, I believe that as Democrats, as liberals, we have to keep ourselves at a higher level than Bush is. We cannot sink to calling names and being bullies. We cannot go there. It's just wrong.
Well put.
And my question for you is this. I have several friends who are going to be voting in this next election who are Republicans. They're voting for Bush on one issue or two issues. I know one of them is voting for him because he supports gun laws, and my friend is a hunter. I know another one is supporting him because he believes that he would be better at managing the war. And it worries me that they are voting up for Bush based on a single issue, and that's it. And I'm wondering, how can we combat this? How can we fight this polarization?
I'm going to make a suggestion to you, and that is that our time in the next few weeks should not be spent trying to change people's minds. I know that sounds like heresy, but I'm going to tell you that our time should be spent mobilizing those people who are ready to go and vote for John Kerry. Because if we do that, John Kerry will be the next president of the United States. I don't discount for a moment the concerns that you have about why someone on the gun issue, for example, John Kerry's come forward and says, look, he's a hunter, but he's not going to take away anybody's guns. I mean, he's addressed that issue. On the war, oh, Bush managing a war? That's all he wants to do is manage a war. So this, but at this moment, 3 weekends left, counting this one. After this meeting, contact the person who's here from the Kerry campaign. Get involved. Get out the vote. That's how we're going to win. Let me tell you about Ohio. I'll use this moment, if I may, to talk to you about Ohio, which I'm returning to tonight on a red eye. I'm just here for 24 hours in Washington State. Ohio. See, if I'd have said 25, they'd go, boo, you know. Ohio is going to go to John Kerry in this election. We're going to make it happen. Yes. And the reason, remember you heard it here. Let me tell you why. Because we lost 160,000 manufacturing jobs. Because like Washington State, there's a million, almost close to a million people who don't have health insurance. Our state's ready to go. And so we are going to focus on getting out the vote. We know that people who are voting for George Bush, you know, we may not be able to change their minds between now and the election, but our energy and our focus should be on getting those who know there needs to be a change. So that's what I would recommend to you. On Election Day, let me tell you what we're doing in Ohio. Usually on Election Day, there's a lot of us outside of polling places waiting for people to come in to hand them a sample ballot or some literature. We're not doing that. Every person that has a moment of time is either on the phones or knocking on doors on Election Day, literally pulling people out to vote, saying, look, you've got to vote. It's rallying the people, getting them out from the early morning all the way to late at night to have a turnout that this country's never seen before. And so, you know, this will happen in Ohio, and it will result in a Kerry victory, and it will happen here. And it will result in a Kerry victory. But let's not worry about those people at this point who just aren't with us. You know what? The train's leaving the station, and after the election, most of them will claim that they voted for John Kerry. Yes. I mean, I say that, and those of you in the audience will remember that you couldn't find anyone who voted for Nixon after he would, you know, left office.
Are you aware of the flu vaccine situation?
Yes, I am. Very aware.
We'd like your comment on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious. You know, they knew they had a contaminated supply. They didn't do anything about finding another vendor. You have people who are, there is a certain amount of vaccine stolen and to go to the black market. There are areas where people can't get the vaccine and they want it. We've got a real healthcare crisis in this country over this. And this is still another example of an administration, Homeland Security, ha! Ha! We're laying off police, fire, EMS, can't get vaccine to people in the flu season, and they want to talk about Homeland Security, oil spill out here, they want to talk about Homeland Security. This, their act is over. You know, it's tired. It's like if it was on a stage, there'd be a point at which people would just, you know, if this was like the Apollo, you know, the audience would go, boo, get out of here, you know. This is what we have to do. This is sick, you know. They're going to give us Homeland Security, and they're accelerating bombing in Fallujah right now. That's Homeland Security? Come on. Look, I look at it this way. This administration couldn't handle a vaccine program, okay? They can't handle a health care program. They can't handle education. They can't handle Social Security. They can't handle the nation's security. The only thing they've been able to handle is the acceleration of the wealth of this country to people at the top. They've done that very well. So, I've just been given the notice that I have to move on to go back to Seattle and then catch a plane or a ride to Bellingham. So we're having a couple rallies there. I want to thank you for this opportunity to come back to Bainbridge. I love this island. This is a great community here that you have, a community of conscience, of activism, of involvement. And when you bring this community together and you speak out in a powerful voice in the election, you are going to be part of creating this this powerful statement about where Washington State's going and merge with that mass of Americans who are demanding from sea to shining sea and beyond that we take a new direction. This really is our moment. This is our moment to shine. This is our moment to declare who we are, to send forth our essence and declare that it is part of a new America. And I'm so glad to have the chance to come back here to be with Dave and Fran Corton, to be here with the Inslees, and all of my friends in this community. I look forward to returning as a visitor, a tourist even, to Bainbridge. I'll see you again. In the meantime, let's get out there. Let's work for John Kerry and John Edwards. Let's create a new America. Patty Murray, new Governor Gregoire, Ross, Barbieri, Inslee, a sweep all across this island, across this state, and across this nation. Thank you, Bainbridge, and I love you.
A couple of short announcements. Get out the vote. Come to the office in Winslow Mall. And mark your calendars for Election Day in the evening. We're having a celebration for democracy.
I'd like to make an announcement, too, before you all leave. I'm the coordinator for Kitsap County Take 5 program. I would like every one of you to sign up to be a team leader. I have lists of people that need to be called, that need to be canvassed. This is a great program. We're centering. There's several different entities that we're all working together. We've got the office on Bainbridge Island. We've got an office in Silverdale. And I have the Take 5 program. This is centering on women because 22 million women are not voting. We have lists. Please sign up with me. I've got a clipboard here. I can take down your information. And let's make this happen. A recent Time magazine article said that it is a fight, vote to vote, block to block, door to door. We have got to roll up our sleeves and get with the program. Come see me now.